Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
Sometimes we look at and look at the kids now and say, how did we do it?
How did you do it?
She had to go to the night shift so we can take turns.
You just do it. Whatever challenge, whatever problem come your way, you just have to face it.
Because as immigrants, like, we don't come from privilege. Every time there's challenge, it's like, we're not going to go back. We just face it and just attack it and just do it.
Yeah.
That's Vanessa and Noel, a couple that turned sacrifice into legacy and loneliness into life filled with purpose. If you ever wonder what it took to build the American dream from scratch, this episode will move you. Vanessa shared how a childhood dream, sparked by the glittering lights of a casino hill she once mistook for New York City, carried her from the Philippines to America. Vanessa arrived with no money, no family nearby, and barely enough to eat. Yet she built a life brick by brick through sheer resilience. Noelle, meanwhile, was a doctor who sold dressed chicken on the side to fund their wedding and a one-way ticket to the US. Together, they faced discrimination, worked endless opposite shifts, one by day, one by night, raising two children without babysitters, learning to cook from scratch, and saving every dollar for their family's future. But what happens next, how they turn exhaustion into excellence and the struggle into generational wealth, is the part you don't want to miss. This is a story about grit that doesn't quit, about choosing faith over fear and love over comfort. It's a reminder that legacy isn't inherited, it's built. And by the end of this episode, you'll see how two ordinary people built something extraordinary and why the immigrant dream still matters now more than ever. This is the Immigrant Millionaire Investors, a movement rewriting what's possible and proving that immigrants don't just come here to survive, but they come here to rise. I hope you enjoy it. Let's dive in.
So Vanessa, has it always been your dream to come to the US?
It started when I was a little girl, elementary school. So a casino is up on the hill. And my mom and her sister and our neighbor, who just came from the States, that neighbor wanted to go to the casino. And I loved the joyride. So I said, can I come along? Not in the casino, but, you know, did you go up? When we drove up there, I looked from the hill to the city and it was like glittering lights. And I just said, wow. New York. Looks like New York. And then that neighbor of ours, she's a little bit snotty, and she said, why, have you been to New York?
Oh my goodness.
I said, no, but one day I will go to New York. So that kind of stemmed from the very beginning, choosing a profession. At that time, I didn't know what I was going to take. But then my sister, the one in California, started going to nursing school. And then I just kind of followed in her steps and I started loving it. And, you know, I said, this is my ticket to go to the U.S. But graduating, I worked on the floor as a med-surg nurse. But then basically I work as a clinical instructor. So I handle students waiting for my chance to come here. So 1992 was my time to come here.
When was it that you went to the casino?
Oh gosh, I must have been like fourth grade, fifth grade school.
For someone to have that kind of like confidence at such a young age, it's really rare. And to have someone actually sort of doubt your capacity to do something like that, and you being a young little girl, you know, to tell her, oh no, I'm going to be there.
And at that time, Arthur's theme, na 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 na, that was playing in the car.
I don't know the name of the song.
New York was mentioned there. And then you know how I found about New York? Love watching movies. American movies. Where else you want to go see, right? So we saw. That's how it all started.
So did you share that with anyone outside of that person? But hey, like after that?
My sister. sisters.
You told her?
My sisters.
How much older are your sisters?
Yeah, my sister in California is a year older than me. Okay. But she graduated 2 years ahead of me.
So what did she say when you first told her that?
Well, she, oh my gosh, I can't even remember. Well, they probably like didn't care, but I knew she wanted to come here too. So that's the reason why she took up nursing also. My mom told her, take up nursing. So she did.
Oh, so it's really final to nursing and to
yeah, two of my sisters are both accountants. They're accountants. And then my brother, he did engineering, but didn't, you know, work as an engineer. Mm. And so my sister in California is a nurse, and so am I.
I feel like for Filipinos, it's accounting, nursing, doctor. Those are like the three, right?
Or law.
Yeah, or law. Like those yes. are like the three, four top profession of all of the
A lot of Filipinos are nurses and doctors that come here. And it's not just in the US, but in London, anywhere in the world.
Is it sort of understood that you have to get into those professions to be able to
it's lead. The easiest way.
It's easy.
Because at that time, we know that nursing in the U.S. is supply and demand, mm-hmm. and it comes and goes. So there's a year that the demand is very high.
Yeah.
Way back 1987, 1988, the demand was very, very high. And then it just like, you know, and I graduated 1990.
Yeah.
So the demand wasn't as high as in the late 1980s, but we were still able to come. And I thought I was destined for New York because my agent said, you're going to go to Brooklyn, you know, Kings County, we just have to wait for your papers and all that. And I just thought, okay, here we go. Bye.
So what was it like when you shared that with them? Like, hey, this is part of my plan. I'm going to go. Like, how did you guys feel about that? Where you were like, hey, I want you to be here with me. Why are you leaving?
But she was so insistent that that's her dream. So yeah. I guess she's...
No, yeah, Noelle had no plans.
How would I get no dream?
No
dream. You're like basically a genius.
Oh, genius.
Finished high school at 15.
Yeah,
so. At 15.
It seems like it was just easy for me. I guess I didn't really study. I was just fast.
Wait.
You just take naps.
You didn't really study?
Wow. No.
He takes naps in like med school.
Like and I school, thought that was, I didn't go to school.
Yeah,
I would just show up for exams.
I went to his best friend's dorm and he was there sleeping.
Like, what were you thinking? Like,
I don't know. I didn't know him well yet. So his best friend is my my classmate's cousin.
That's how you guys met?
Yeah, that's how we met at my girlfriend's and she's a classmate of mine in nursing. It was her 18th birthday. So yeah, that's how we
were
we
you
met.
Sleeping at the time?
Because see, this is what happened. I don't attend classes.
It's on record. Like, not a good.
I felt like
example for
no
next generation.
It's a very bad. So I even told my kids like I don't follow that one. But anyway, the reason for that is that I realized that the exams are taken from the teacher's lecture, right? But it's so boring to attend because they're just basically mouthing everything. And so I was just looking for somebody that takes good notes. So I found one. By the time the classes are done, I just photocopy his notes. And then I go home and so the whole day I go to the movies every day.
No.
Take a nap in the afternoon, photocopy his notes, and then go home and study and then go to the next day. That was my routine.
You make it sound like it's like arithmetic or something. This is medical school.
So that's why it's so funny. By the time we're intern and then now like you actually see patients.
Yeah.
So I was just taking exams before left and right, and there's no correlation. So I thought it was so boring because I didn't understand. Like, there's no correlation. I didn't see patients until I was an intern.
Yeah.
And then I see our teachers. They were our mentors or teachers, and they were doing rounds with the patients.
Yeah.
And they see me like, who are you?
They're like, oh my gosh, this is like, what, who is this guy?
Well, his classmates complain.
Yeah, they complain
because, you know, he's not attending. So
they know that you don't show up.
They gave him an exam.
So they asked, because there's a lot of people that fail. So like half of them. So it's like, he said, this is not fair. Noel is not attending classes and he's passing.
So he's cheating the system.
Yeah, like
so you were given another exam.
Yeah, right? So I was told then you have to take another one, but it's still pass. So it's like, what can you do? So
well, the teacher can't do anything.
Oh my
God.
Yeah, so that was amazing. So I had a very interesting life in medicine. So I felt like it was very powerful. I really enjoyed my life in med school.
I would too.
I was watching a movie every day.
I was just like, because I imagine like when people like in the medical field in general, it's like really a lot of studying.
Yes, it is.
Right? A lot of studying, yes.
And like you just went to the movies all the time.
Yes.
Yes.
And then I take naps every afternoon.
But he studies like from
usually from 9 or 10 in the evening to 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's my time. So
what is that, like 5, 6?
Because it's quiet.
I don't know why I just developed that during that time after I take a nap, mm-hmm. like from 6 to 10 o'clock, and then so my brain is just so open, like I just,
like when do you sleep?
During the day.
This is really tasty.
Oh, thank you.
So good.
Do
you like it?
So Noel already started his residency for a couple of years, and he was already my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you I made him wait 2 years?
No. So how did that happen?
Wait. So
we met in way back in 1987 at my girlfriend's birthday party.
No, 1987.
Oh, when you first met?
Yeah.
You were a second year, right?
Yeah, I was second year in nursing.
Nursing school.
And you were third year med student. Yeah. And then people will say, oh my gosh, that's so sweet. Was it love at first sight? Of course not.
No. We didn't like each other.
No, I know. There was no attraction.
There was no attraction. She was just blabbing around.
I thought... You spot Vanessa and you're like, dude. Yeah,
no, that was October. He saw me. We saw each other again in January. It was a big, we call it Sinulog. I don't know, have you been there? It's like a big bomb. Mardi Gras in the street. Okay. And he saw me again. That's when he started liking me. I don't know why.
What changed?
there was a glow in her face. Like, oh, this is a person. There was a glow.
Just aura.
That was I think I know her before.
That was January.
But then the first time, she was just talking too much, and then.
So when you met her the first time, it was just like one time meeting or keep meeting?
No, the one in October.
Yeah.
Well, that was just one time. Okay. And we didn't see each other again until January.
He was too sleepy. He didn't wake up yet.
I don't know. He was sleepy. I didn't know. I was focused with my schooling, remember? America. Yeah.
America. Yes.
America. So, yeah.
She was very determined. That's what she wants to do.
And then February came, Valentine's.
Oh, that was...
He called me and said, you want to invite me for dinner and disco.
Wait a minute. Were you nervous?
To ask them? No, I wasn't nervous. I was already like, what is it, 23?
Yeah.
You're not nervous anymore.
You're in third year med school. I said, but he started calling me, you know, on the phone. Yeah. And of course, there was no cell phone at the time. So home phone. And I did ask my mom permission. And my mom says, I don't know who that guy is. No. So when he called me that night and said, are you coming? And I said, no. Why? Because my mama said no. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did your mom say no?
Because she didn't know him. No. I mean, she hasn't met him yet.
She's also there. They have a sick family.
My mom, you can go out during the day. Yeah. But when it comes to nighttime, don't even ask permission. She will not let you go out the house. Stay home. So my life was home, school, church.
Wow.
That was my life.
So your mom, like, what was her profession?
My mom was a home economics teacher. Home economics, but she did not work that. She was in business. We had a rice mill that her family owned in another province, and she was the one running that one.
Oh, wow. So was she going back and forth a lot?
She was going back and forth because my grandma lived with us, her mom. But when my grandma passed away, she says, well, I need to watch out for my kids. I can't be far away because my father was also like traveling for his work. And so she stayed put, and let her sister run the rice mill.
When my grandfather on my dad's side moved to Thailand, he worked at a rice mill. in Thailand. Okay. So like he went from China and then like
almost to Singapore.
He went to Singapore. Uh-huh. My grandmother didn't allow him to go to Thailand. So we're Thai, but he couldn't go to Thailand.
Or else we would have been Singapore.
So he said, okay, fine, I'll do what you want. So he went to Singapore. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, but in his mind, like kind of like you.
I'm making my way
to Thailand. So yeah, he went for a meal.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So oh my gosh, that's so interesting. So like
yeah, so in March, I don't know, like the next month, he asked me again for to go out. And I said, okay. So we went to like just like a snack thing. And then he asked me to be his girlfriend.
Right away. He knew what he liked.
I'm
not going to waste time.
Be his girlfriend. And I said, no. I just shut him down. I said, no. And he says, why? I said,
he even asked why.
Like, what? Am I good enough? You don't like me? Because he started calling me already. So I started to get to know him, mm-hmm. but not really know him. Uh-huh. But then I said, no, I want to focus on my schooling. I don't want to be distracted with relationships.
You're so like,
so I'm so focused. See, New York. That's it. New York. I don't want to come to America.
So when you got here, was it like culturally like shocking or was
big time. We were discriminated. I can tell you stories.
At workplace?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We were the very first foreign graduate nurses.
Wow.
I employed in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, way back in 1992.
In the whole city.
I guess so.
The whole city.
Yeah.
Wow. So like they have like a recruiting office in the
our recruiter is from California.
Oh, okay.
Teresa. And so she has connections and everything. And this hospital, Northwest General Hospital, is about to declare Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a small community hospital. Mm-hmm. And because of nursing shortage, they were employing agency nurses.
Okay, which is more
and
expensive.
Very expensive. And they cannot survive. If she presented like, you know, we can do this, nurses from the Philippines. And so there were 10 of us.
So like, were they contact? Did they have like a booth at your school or something?
Oh, no. Teresa knows my sister because she was also my sister's agent. And then she just picks the best like student from different schools in the Philippines to bring up here. So to bring here. The other Filipino nurses, they're like clinical instructors also in a different school, nursing school over there. There were 10 of us and we worked hard and studied at the same time. And then, but our mentors, our preceptors were the agency nurses. Of course, their jobs were threatened. They gave us really, really poor evaluation. They were about to deport us. They had a board meeting and they were ready to deport us.
Yeah.
And so the good thing too, all the board members were Filipino doctors. An ER doctor and a cardiologist.
Lucky.
And so the cardiologist called us and says, where are you? Are you in your apartment? I'm going to come and have a meeting with you. So he did come and asked that, okay, it says there in the evaluation that we don't know how to auscultate for lung sounds. We don't know how to auscultate for bowel sounds. We don't know how to give insulin shots. I mean, come on. He found out that it was false. And so he presented that back to the boards. And then to eliminate the agency nurses being preceptors, so they had the director of nursing, the manager for ICU, and our clinical educator as our preceptor. So they divided us into three groups. So if you worked the night shift, they worked the night shift with us.
Just to make sure they actually see what you do.
Yes.
Wow.
And of course, yeah. And they found out that was false.
So when you were preparing to come to the U.S., what were your perception of what the U.S. was? And then like how that changed when you actually landed?
Well, I wanted to come to a big city. Well, Milwaukee is a big city, but if you look at the Milwaukee on the plane, like there's really no big
compared to New York.
Like what is this? What have we gotten ourselves into? Okay, this is one perfect example on the plane from LA to Milwaukee. I sat beside this elderly couple. They woke me up and say, it's time for you before they feed you. And when I opened, it was mac and cheese. We don't have mac and cheese in the Philippines. And I said, what is this? I thought it was the most disgusting thing that I've ever eaten. So that's one. And then they put us in a house. They rented out a house for us, which is like 2 bus rides to the hospital. Mm. And we're not used to that. It's either we walk or we take public transportation that goes us from, you know. And it was so difficult. We live with our landlord and, you know, we got lost of our first day of orientation. And so we moved to an apartment. Yeah, it's a little bit of a culture. Differences in culture. And I don't know. I was assigned in the ICU and our supervisor, who was a guy, I think his name is Chuck. And he just said, oh, Philippines, you still live on trees? Oh. And I thought he was joking. And he wasn't. And I said, oh my God, we've got malls bigger than your biggest mall here in America. You know, it's just like, okay, then maybe it was just like ignorance.
Yeah.
Because it's Milwaukee. Maybe they're not used to seeing us, you know. Yeah.
We had the same thing. Like when I was younger, they would ask, like, do you still ride elephants? In Thailand.
Okay.
So I totally understand. But
I would say, what do you think about Tarzan and Jane in the Philippines?
Like, it's just like I said, but most of them, they just don't know.
They're just like not exposed yet.
Yeah, they're not exposed.
So that's how globalization hasn't really like,
didn't catch on
them. Yeah.
So that's really interesting how like you didn't anticipate having those type of experiences.
It would have been different if we were in New York. New York is so used to seeing Filipino nurses.
Yeah.
My sister worked in Manhattan, you know. Mm-hmm. So we will be welcomed. It's just like any ordinary day. Maybe we're just like, you know, and there will be Filipino food restaurants over there in Milwaukee. We couldn't even find any at that time. Maybe they probably have now, but at the time, no.
So what did you guys eat like the first year?
Well, Noel wasn't there yet. Yeah. I was hungry all the time. I didn't know how to cook. You think I could make all the know how to boil eggs, but we didn't know because we didn't have any transportation.
Yeah.
So we just walked from our apartment and it's a lot of walking and it was already July going into winter. Oh, it was very challenging. As I told you, blood, sweat, and tears, crying, plus loneliness is, I think, is a killer. Very, very lonely. And you get so homesick, you know?
But were you able to call home a lot at that time? I don't think
it was expensive. Oh my God, one of my very first paycheck all went to AT&T because very expensive at that time. We didn't have any, you know. Now it's so easy now.
Then you were here, but your sister was in New York. Did you meet her at all the first year or
no, I did not meet her the first year.
So it was almost like just drop.
Well, not the first year, not in 1992, but we flew back home together in February because we got married.
Mm.
Yeah. So I was here only for 6 months.
6 months.
I came in July. We were the last ones to take the board exam in nursing that's not computerized yet. So we were this all had. So 2 days. After the second day of exam, I flew to New York. My sister and I flew back home to the Philippines. And then just a couple days later, then we had the wedding.
So you planned to have the wedding at that time?
He prepared all the wedding. I had nothing to do with it.
I've never done it, but I was the only one that prepared
it. He prepared the whole thing. He and his family spent for the entire thing. I have no money.
I just showed up.
So jet lagged. From my wedding night, I slept.
So wait, after marriage, how long did it take for you to move to the U.S.?
Oh, we went to the embassy right away.
So yeah, like 2 days later and went to the embassy and they would just give us the visa.
Because it's all legal. It's all legal.
You have to prove that there's communication, that you're really together. So we kept a lot of letters and you have to show.
And phone calls. And,
all the money.
They have to verify that they
invested in him.
I mean, it's a gamble for I don't know because when we arrive, we don't know if we're gonna successful. So it's
For someone that did not have any plans of coming, and for him to stop, he was supposed to go into his third year residency in pathology.
Yeah,
and he quit he could prepare for the wedding. Yeah, so he could prepare for the wedding, and then
Get money
and save money and for us to come.
That's how you save money? Oh, by not going to school?
No, no. As soon as I resigned from residency, I was selling dressed chicken. Dressed chicken?
So basically, there's chicken that you go and you cook. Like
they're for rotisserie?
Yeah, like they do stuff. They remove some stuff inside, like rotisserie chicken.
That's scary.
Yeah. These are, I don't know exactly that. Wow. But that was the term they used for dressed chicken.
Oh, my God. Doctor,
that's
too.
Correct. Yeah. So, but the thing that I realized is that I have connections with the hospital because I know the administrator. So I went and approached them and said, like, hey, I'm going to supply you with dressed chicken. Because obviously chicken is one thing that, you know, they cook it for the entire cafeteria. So they get a lot. And so I said, I'm going to sell you. And then they asked me, what's your price? You know, how much are you getting for your dressed chicken? And so I basically just told them a much lower price. So they said, okay, we're going to go
but
with you.
Were they shocked when you told them, like resident, hey, I'm here to sell chicken. How did that, and your parents?
And yeah, how did that go?
I mean, I just did it myself.
But did your parents? Okay, they knew you're going to come. So
my parents knew that I'm going to go with her.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they understood that that's why I resigned.
Like regular people who know you as, hey, this guy is going places to be a doctor. How did they take this?
So they were shocked. Like, what happened? And so I usually say, well, I'm eventually going to move to the United States. And I'm getting married, so I have to, you know, get some money for the wedding.
How did they look at you? They wasn't like
wondering,
like what's
going on?
Because, like you said, it's a risk on both your parts.
Right. Yeah.
Because not only is this a new, like taking the relationship to like the new level, like a permanent level.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're also at the same time have to adapt to a new everything, new culture, new life, new job, new everything.
Mm-hmm.
So both of you had to have some strong convictions that this has to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, we felt like that we can make it work for sure. But it's just like sometimes you're questioning how long
it's gonna take
us for us to make it work.
Like the process.
But we knew that we're going to make it work.
Is it because of your professions that you knew it's going to work, or is it because of you two that you felt like it'll work?
Well, we knew at that time. It's difficult when you are in that situation. Mm. It is so difficult to even imagine that you will be successful in the future. Mm. It is so difficult to even imagine that we will be able to buy a house, we will be able to buy a car.
Yeah.
No. In fact, when we borrowed money to buy our very first, our second car.
Same
I couldn't sleep for days.
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to borrowing money. Mm. You know, it was so hard.
Mm.
But at that time, yeah, it was hard, very hard life.
So the biggest thing for us, it makes, I guess, a little bit easier for us to be successful is because of our profession.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing too is discrimination, right?
Yeah.
So you know how much they paid us? $13 an hour. Okay. When we passed the board exam, they just up it up to $1. So $14. And we knew no better until a new graduate nurse came.
Yeah.
And we found out she was paid $25, $26 per hour. And we have more experience. We were the one precepting these new students, and they were paid a lot more than us. They made money out of us.
Like almost like double.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we kind of protested.
Mm.
We said, this is not, we're so meek. It's just like being like Asian, like, you know, we just have to take it. But then we at that time to say, I think this is not right. So we kind of protested, and they called us like one-on-one in the CEO's office.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to, you know, so they increased it to $16 an hour.
Hmm.
At that time,
I
didn't care because we were leaving.
Uh-huh.
We already got into a residency program.
Uh-huh.
Because if you stayed longer, then I would, you know, we would fight it more.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to get into the residency program?
So it's as a foreign medical graduate, it's always hard because... you have to compete to the medical graduates here, the U.S. medical graduates. So that means you have to be better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So either you have really good grades or you have good experience and references. So those are the things that can up you up.
The good thing about Noel, he's smart. So he passed his board exam. There's three steps.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap.
I was standing there.
How much are they? How much were they?
At the time, it was $800, which is a lot of money.
I don't want $1,200 right now.
Yeah, it's $1,200.
So each time you take the exam, you had to pay $800.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow.
Wait, who paid? You paid?
I did.
So I wasn't working.
And no, she was working like crazy. She worked like 16 hours. Sometimes I worked,
So that was the reason at the time I knew how to cook. Because I was
Discovered.
So I was cooking.
And we gained a lot of weight because it's all fried food. That's all you also have to do, like fried spam and everything was fried. So
we were used to doing spam.
Yeah.
Well, I love was spam.
Cooking and it was studying.
Well, but that was what we're used to.
And our if they look at us like this, they said, oh my gosh. I said, no, our very first apartment, we only had one single, not even a bed, a mattress. We have no dining set. We have like, we called it the balik bayan box, like a big box that we bring our stuff here. Mm-hmm. That was our table, our dining table.
So that was something you brought from the Philippines?
No, because we brought our stuff.
Our stuff in boxes. We didn't have any dining table.
So you bring your clothes.
No sofa.
You didn't have luggages.
No, we have luggage, but then we have also to bring our pictures, wedding pictures, and all our stuff.
Yeah. So his books.
I mean, books.
In boxes.
And so those were boxes.
So, and we couldn't afford furniture at that time. Yeah. And the only one.
No, but we were also thinking that. Yeah, it's only temporary for us. So it's like, we thought like, where would we buy furniture?
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, we wouldn't know where we're going to go.
So we thought like, why would we buy
where he's going to be matched for his residency, we wouldn't know. So that was, I think, wise for us to do that. It was easier
to save some money.
Was it hard to live in that kind of condition while you were going through it? Like now,
is it weird? I just got married.
Do we have a choice? No.
And other nurses were living like this as well?
No.
No, they're all furnished.
Apartments
are so beautiful now.
But they didn't have anybody to pay for
it. I know, that's what I said.
The exam, that's $800. To apply for residency, you have to pay per application.
Yeah.
And you have to rent a car, the flight, the hotel, the food.
So your test in Milwaukee?
No, for the interview.
For the interview.
You have to go for the whole
He was everywhere. He got interviewed at Yale. He got interviewed at so many hospitals.
Every time is like money. Just not this
ATM machine.
Exactly, right?
When she was saying other nurses, like, I'm like, but they didn't have
They didn't have Noel, like Noel's profession. The thing is, he supported me by coming here, you know.
So I was the driver, I was the cook, and then so I cleaned.
Resident chicken seller.
Yeah.
Cook, and clean, and then boom.
he was doing all that until then he got matched at Beaumont Hospital in Michigan.
Yeah,
and that's why we moved from Milwaukee to Michigan.
Was it still as cold
in the hospital where I matched? It's basically the same as Milwaukee. Until we move up north, and that's why it's really cool.
We moved up north. Yeah. When he got done with his before he finished his residency, he had three.
How many years is residency?
Normally it's 5 years, but then I finished mine in 4 years.
So. Now he's bragging.
No, because of my experience. Because I remember I had 2 years.
Yes.
So they felt like they wanted me to stay. It's like, but then I said, well, I should get credit for the 2 years because I was in the Philippines, and they said, oh, okay, so I'll give it to you.
Uh-huh. Vanessa, when you came here, did you know English?
Yeah, taught English in the Philippines.
Oh, okay, so
our educational system in the Philippines is patterned after the American system, not the British.
Okay.
So to come here, I had to take, of course, my Philippine Nursing Board exam.
Yeah.
I have to take the CGFNS exam, which is a Certified Foreign Graduate Nurses exam. And then I have to take the NCLEX, which is the board exam of nursing here in the U.S.,
and you took all those in the Philippines?
The CGFNS was in the Philippines, and then the NCLEX was here.
And were they like did you spend a lot of time studying for them or?
Yeah, I studied and at the same time I work. When I was in Milwaukee, it took me that 6 months to really study for the board exam and then work at the same time. So needless to say, no sleep. I can get only like a couple hours sleep and I have to go again for another 16 hour
I don't know work. How I can do that because it's such a
blood, sweat and tears.
Because nursing is such a tough profession.
It is.
And like my grandparents have been hospitalized a few times and I don't know if you guys are trained that way or the way they select people, but everyone is so caring. I can tell.
And patient.
I can tell that they are taking the best care of my grandparents. Yeah. Like I can see that in their eyes. Yeah. Like every single one, like you said, so patient.
Yeah.
Is that trained or is that just the type of people that go
for
the
profession? Not all nurses are like that.
Yeah.
It has, let me tell you, I've worked with nurses that's just there for the money.
Yeah.
But there are also a lot of nurses that are very compassionate and that you really have, you really care for your patients. Yeah. And I work in the ICU and I love my profession. I love my job. I was a critical care nurse for a long time.
That's a tough.
And then 2003, I switched to what we call vascular access or IV therapy. So I love poking people.
Oh, so you're very good at it.
Oh, I'm very good at it.
She has like, when every time she has like, it's hard to find her veins.
Yeah.
Oh. And they always like poke her. Like,
she's very good.
I saved a life on a Korean Airlines from Chicago to Korea.
How did that happen?
We went home December 25 because his mom died in Maryland, brought the body to the Philippines. And so all four of us flew on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
No, Christmas Day. Korean Airlines. And as soon as we boarded the plane from Chicago, there was an announcement and said, any doctors, any nurses on the plane, we need your help, you know. And I did not do anything. I did not say anything. And then and he didn't either.
Wait, that's what you're saying.
And then, this is okay. Funny. And then my daughter looked at me and says, Mom, aren't you going to help? And of course, you have to set an example to your daughter who was like 11 years old at the time.
Oh my goodness.
And so I stood up and I said, aren't you going to help? And he says, why is she dead yet? Okay, the reason why he said that.
Right. You know what pathology, right?
You know what pathology does, right? Okay. They do autopsies. And so he doesn't really.
So he's not available. I only help them when they're dead.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And so
if there's a heartbeat, don't talk to me.
No, talk to me. That's how my.
Yeah. That's all my department.
And he kept saying, my patients don't talk to me.
My patients are always happy. I've never seen that. I've never heard a complaint. They're always happy. They're always satisfied. So that is like, that I can say for sure.
So it was a 30-year-old.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It was a 30-year-old lady, a woman.
Yeah.
She's severely dehydrated. So it already started in Chicago. She was like, you know, and then they laid a blanket in the back of the plane and then she was already laying there, like, you know, severely dehydrated. And then I said, so where's your, and there were only two of us that responded.
Mm.
One was a first year resident in plastic surgery. And then me. And so, and he says, so the flight attendant was bringing this kit and I said, okay. And I said, oh, I have to ask the captain permission to open it. I said, oh, then
go.
So it came back open. Guess what? They only have one angio cap. That means I only have one
cap.
She's not a skinny one. She's a little bit of a bigger one.
That means her veins are
collapsed now.
They collapse. It's hard. But I don't go by seeing. I go by feeling.
Mm.
And so, and that's why I said, like, I'm good at what I do.
This is very good.
So
how was
so
that?
I just got it.
So how did you feel? Were you nervous?
Yeah, with all the turbulence. I said, can you tell the captain not to make a little smoother ride? So they have one and then, I got it in, got the IVs in, but I did tell them that you need to update your kit.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I explained to them why you need more than one AngioCath there. You need more. They have two bags, which is fine, an LR and an NS, which is okay, but they need to have one more than one. What if I couldn't get it?
Yeah.
We're screwed.
So that flight was transit to Korea.
Yeah. So we flew from Michigan to Chicago, right?
Chicago.
Spent the night in Chicago. Chicago, then flew Chicago to Korea.
So they did they divert the plane or
no? No.
Ah, so you also
got revived.
So you guys survived.
Dehydration.
Like, that was a party.
Yeah. But before when we landed, she was the first one to go out. But before they called me again, and then they said, "Can you come check her IV, make sure everything is okay?" So I went there. You know, they didn't even give me an extra cookie or anything.
I was gonna say, did they announce?
No upgrade. Not even a cookie.
Not even like, here's some credit for saving us.
Nothing. How about it's okay. We don't need any recognition. I just like the fact that I showed my daughter.
Yeah, for our kids. Yeah,
they were happy.
They were happy that we hired.
But it's like, Mom, why don't you get help? Yeah, Mom, I just gotta help.
Especially our daughter. Dad. They always just laugh like, "Oh, dad's not gonna do." Patient is still.
They know what dad does, so yeah.
Wow, that's why.
Yeah.
When you were in the Philippines, would you have imagined that scenario would be something that what you learned how to do would eventually get, you know, like become something so important? You save someone's life just because of that.
Not just me, but being a nurse, you always save lives. Mm. Working in critical care, we save lives. We are the first one. If there's a code blue, we are the first ones there. I don't know how many lives I have saved, you know, just responding to that, working in critical care. I mean, I've been a nurse for 35 years, so yeah.
How come you chose to do like critical care versus other type of nurse? Mm. You like the adrenaline? Like rush?
Yeah, you're young and you know, you just want the challenge and all that. And my sister too, it kind of was a big influencer because she worked critical care. She was a CCRN. So to become a CCRN, you have to take an exam. Mm. You can be an ICU nurse, but you want to go up. Mm. You have to take another board exam for that, and which I did. Mm. I was very pregnant and I took it.
Wait, what? You were pregnant and you have to take more?
Yeah. I was pregnant with Isabella and we moved here in 1996, and I took the exam, which means that, and that was still not computerized, and I have to keep going to the bathroom. But they were fine because they saw me with my preggy belly.
So were you working at the time as well?
Oh yeah.
So you were working, pregnant, and studying for a board exam
for CCRM for critical care. That's just like advanced.
So but you were doing all the things.
Of course, yes.
Wait, what happened to the husband?
Oh, he's busy. He was busy.
When we had the kids, we never had any babysitter. Mm. Oh. So we went through this process of, so I go to work for residency in the morning, 8 o'clock to 5 or 6 o'clock. And she goes, she had to go to the night shift.
I work nights.
So we can take turns. We can take turns watching.
Night shift.
Yes, correct. Night shift. Yeah. It was night shift. But then we have really Isabel at the time. So by the time we see each other, she just hands me the baby, Isabel, mm-hmm. and I take care of her the whole night. Mm-hmm. And then in the morning, I give her the Isabel. So that was our routine for at least 1 or 2 years, right?
Yeah, we never had the two kids, no babysitter, no daycare. We took care of our kids.
And because
we were both hands on.
And because like if it's back in the Philippines, you have family.
That's right.
Family, you can get nanny, you know, we call them yaya.
Yeah. And here it was like everything you had, it was just the two of you.
Yeah.
You had to do everything.
Sure. And not because it's, you know, we can work and pay for a babysitter, mm-hmm. but me being so paranoid, I am so paranoid, you know. Kids are so precious. You mm-hmm. can't just leave them with anybody. It's just him and I, and we have no family here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I learned to sleep standing up.
Oh, seriously?
Mm-hmm. Because our daughter was, every time, at nighttime, she would be crying the whole night unless you carry her. And then just hold her. So what I did is I carry her and then basically just lean on the wall.
And my daughter slept so well during the day for me.
Till about 9.
Because come midnight till 5 a.m., she's awake and crying.
Oh, no.
And I said, "Isabel, you kept on crying like you don't stop." But you have a sister that was like that too. No matter what you do, nothing can pacify. Yeah. They said that their colic or whatever, you do everything for a colicky baby, nothing works. So Isabel was a difficult baby. And we thought, I said, "This is it. No more."
Some more,
and then Nico came.
Another study.
Well, Nico was a... was we didn't expect.
Yeah, it was unexpected.
How far apart are they?
27 months. Yeah, 27 months.
Was he also stand up sleeping?
No. So he was completely opposite. Mm. He would just sleep the whole time. don't want to be bothered. If you bother him, wake him up because you have to feed. He would start crying. So you guys,
no eating.
No eating.
What about during the day? Was he also like that?
He takes 4-hour naps, which is okay with me because I work the night shift. Yeah. But I have a toddler that's an insomniac. Isabel will not take naps. Oh, she was a big problem child. Oh my god.
Oh,
very difficult. Mm-hmm. But Nico can take 4-hour naps, but then I have this toddler here who won't take a nap. It's like, yeah.
Life has always have challenges.
A lot of challenges. Yeah. Now we look back, like sometimes we look at the kids now and say, how did we do it?
Yeah.
You know, like how did we do it? Yeah.
And like, how did you do it? Like, what was it? Just like this?
Yeah. Just do it. You just do it. Whatever challenge, whatever problem come your way, you just have to face it.
I think that's like the difference between like immigrant and just non-immigrant, because as immigrants, like we don't come from privilege. So like, we have to have a lot of delayed gratification. We sacrifice a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then every time there's challenges, like we're not going to go back. We just face it and just attack it and just do it.
Yeah.
Right, Paul? So like delayed gratification, is that something that you guys had because you had those goals already? Or is it like something you developed? Like when you were a kid, were you less patient wanting stuff right away? Or like how did you end up having that kind of mindset?
It's you need to learn. It's a learning experience.
Yeah.
It's all about learning, because in the Philippines, labor there is very cheap.
Yeah.
Just like in Thailand, you can get a maid.
Yeah.
And so we don't do anything except we focus on studying and just study. Mm. They take care of everything. Over here, that's another big cultural, I don't know, did you experience that? Did you grow up in Thailand?
Yeah, so we had babysitters in Thailand, my parents, maids,
and maids.
A lot of them. Yeah. But then like here, we had
here you do everything.
Mom and dad.
So it's like another big shock for us. We do everything. So, and then now with kids, we have no choice. You know, Isabel's already here.
We just have to show
her back. So, and Nico. So we just do the best. But were we patient when we were back home? I was the youngest. I was the youngest of 5 kids.
Mm.
Not spoiled, nothing. I don't know.
My dad always emphasizes that we always save money.
Mm.
And so I always argue with him about that one because so I like to spend. But then my dad was always like, any money. He would explain to me why there's a rationale for why you save money, because this is for something.
And if you were not patient before, you learn how to be patient.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to learn. You need to adapt.
Yeah.
Into your whatever circumstance or whatever situation you are in, you need to learn how to adapt, because otherwise it's not going to work. And the most important thing is you support each other no matter what.
Mm.
Coming to disciplining the kids,
you
have to agree, you know. And that's one good thing Noelle and I have. We do, I don't know how we get along. We just get along. Like, yeah, we've been married like 30, almost 34 years. So it's like, we just get along.
That's like the pillar. Like you have very different personalities,
mm-hmm.
but it fits together.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like, if you don't have the rock, depending, you know, need to be able to lean on each other.
Yeah.
With all the things you went through, you probably would have left already. Maybe one of you, maybe like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I can have maids at home. Why am I doing this?
That's correct. Yeah.
And Noah likes to spend.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
He likes to spend. Oh my God.
Oh, he likes to spend his money. So his very first, in the way back in the Philippines when he was a resident, his very first paycheck, he bought a watch.
Ah.
More than what he earned.
He went to debt.
I was shocked because my very first paycheck, I put it in a CD.
Oh.
I just took a little bit out so I can buy ice cream for my family to treat them.
Oh.
And then here he is. And I said, why are you? I said, oh my gosh, you're going to go bankrupt, you know. But yeah, but you have to learn too.
He learned too.
Yeah, I'm frugal.
No, but that's like, that's That's interesting that both you, like, you had that mindset, because most people growing up, no one really talks about money. So we don't know how to handle it. You know, that's why, like, Noel. Yeah, most people would be like, Noel, like, first paycheck, hey, what's the biggest, fanciest thing I can buy? Mm. And you did literally the opposite. So yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah.
You literally, like, here's a big chunk. I'm going to take this little piece and, like, find happiness in just celebrating something that is, like, a little ice cream.
Yeah. I'm good at saving.
She's very good at it.
I'm very frugal.
When you think about it, like, a lot of people are now great at, like, making money, but what people don't have is, like, your kind of mindset that, hey, once I make money, I invest, I put it so that it keeps growing, like, have the money, have a career. Yeah. Like, most of the people are like us, like, hey, we make the money, we're great at making money, and we just go spend. I think that's why we love, like, real estate, because it really help shift that mindset.
Right. Yeah.
Because we still spend, but now we buy real estate.
That's right.
Instead of buying liabilities, instead of like being in bad debt, we're actually good debt, buying assets that, hey, we can go out and buy more stuff.
And Noel has changed a lot through the years because he knows that he needs to save money, because our kids are not cheap kids. You know, both of them went to University of Michigan. That's not cheap.
Yeah.
No, plus Nico went further and went to med school, and that's not cheap at all. And he paid for everything.
So
we had to save a lot of money. We had to learn to save.
But the kids also, like, we said, like, oh, I can't buy you this because, you know, you remember? So they keep arguing.
Did you feel like it was difficult to impart that immigrant grit to your kids who were born here? How did you guys feel when you were, like, getting, you know, you're pregnant, you know, you're you know, they're coming, but it's like, how did you, like, feel like, oh my gosh, are they gonna be
spoiled? We have to instill Filipino values.
Yeah.
Our values, our culture, we have to instill it in them, our faith.
Yeah.
We are aware. Mm. When they grow, there will be a lot of influence, not just, you know, from school, from friends, from from the environment, but at least they have that core.
Yeah.
You know, they have that core faith. You don't need to go to church like every Sunday like we do, but as long as you have the faith, it's all good enough. You pray, that's good enough for me, you know, but you can't, like, push them. But at least you instill them those values, and they're learning from it.
And you do that by, do you talk to them about it, or do you show them, like, how do you kind of instill those values?
Oh, since they were little, we pray together.
Mm.
So we take them to church.
Mm.
Every Sunday we take them to church. We bring them to a Filipino group, right? It's called Inauska. So we bring them to a Filipino gathering so they can meet other Filipinos. They can see, and then we bring them to the Philippines also so they can see that not all people live like this, like good, you know, there's a lot of poor people.
Because I think that's one of the hardest things is, like, you have the not quit grit, but, like, how most parents that we talk to are worried about, hey, I've made it. What's going to happen to my kids?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, like, you want to protect them, but then you end up actually making them basically, unable to, like, be an adult, you know?
Well, the most important thing is these kids know communication is important.
Yeah.
And we have to be open, open-minded.
Yeah.
Being Asian,
we're
a little bit close-minded to a lot of things, right? Yeah. But you have to learn. We also have to adapt.
Mm.
We have to be open-minded so they will open up to us.
Mm.
They can talk to us freely about anything, whether it's their faith, it's their relationship, their love lives, because they are so open with their love lives to us.
Yeah.
Which
is amazing. Because we were not like that.
We can't talk to our parents about, you know, dating and all that, or broken heart.
Yeah.
If you get broken heart, our kids, both of our, both of my kids experience being broken hearted. So, and they were so open to us about it.
So that's, like, part of the American culture that you guys adapted.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, something you raised, that, hey, this more openness, the family bonding over, like, having real conversations about things that you typically don't talk about. That's something that you guys embrace as part of the American culture.
That's just one of them, too. Yeah, that's just one. Communication is important. Just like in any relationship, communication is important.
Was that intentional, or just sort of happened? Just, like, openness?
It has to be intentional.
Okay.
Because Filipinos are, we Asian really are, like, we're not really open. I mean, you can't really talk. Yeah. I mean, you can't talk to your parents. Yeah,
even now.
We're not free.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, we're not really, we're not like that. But we have to learn. We need, we have to, you know, we talk about it and we said we need to be open to our kids. We need to learn. Sometimes it's difficult for me. I'm an Asian, like Asian tiger mom. And then he keeps me grounded. Yeah, he will. And if I can't, like, you know, I discipline the kids and sometimes they don't listen to me anymore because I'm just like a big nagger. And so, you know, I talk to him and then he talks to the kids. So it's more of like a support.
That's so amazing. And like, I like that dynamic. So it's like, hey, I can imagine he comes in smiling, like, hey, no big deal. Okay, let me tell, like, something like that. Like, mom just, like, gave you the right to act. Yeah. And then dad is like, all right, tell me. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Kind of like that. And almost mischievous, like, kind of like, you know, like, okay, let's go do something fun.
Perfect example. Yeah. Tennis. Both of my kids are in varsity tennis.
Okay.
Oh, they don't want me to watch them.
No?
No. In fact, they tell me, mom, like, my daughter will tell me not to watch her.
Yeah.
And then my son will look at me and says, mom, you can watch me, but when I make a mistake, can you not, like, raise your eyebrow? And I said, you can see my eyebrow, like,
from really far away.
Like, you can see. So they're in tune to our facial expression. They love dad watching them. Because whether they make a mistake, dad's like, I tell Isabel, Isabel, you run like a girl. And she says, oh, I'm a girl. You know, you can hustle, sweetheart. You can hustle, you know. Aww. Very competitive nature. So that's it. And Noel is so laid back. You know, whether you make a mistake or you win, you lose, there, he's cheering. You're like, oh, yeah, you did a great job. And if it's just, you know, if just us, the kids not listening, he's like, they didn't do a good job. They suck. You know, but I can't tell the kids that, right?
Yeah.
You can't tell the kids that. It didn't hurt their feelings or whatever. So I tell him and he says, it's okay. They'll do better next time.
You're just kids.
Yeah, that's him. It's okay. Yeah. They'll do better next time. Yes. And he'll tell the kids.
You know, your dream originally was to go to New York and you didn't go to New York to work, right?
No.
And like, so what was that like when you were like, hey, I'm not going to go to New York anymore. I'm going to go to Michigan. Did you feel like, okay, it's all right? Or did you feel kind of like sad?
Oh, no, not sad at all. Because it's not like I've never been to New York. So we visit, because my sister lives in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So we go visit her and go see different places, tour New York. Mm. That was one place I did not want to live.
No.
So, yeah. And moving to Michigan. And of course, my life is with him now. So wherever he goes, I go with him. And I believe in destiny.
Yeah.
I believe in destiny. I was not destined for New York. Can you imagine from New York to Milwaukee? Yeah. Cheesehead. Yeah. So, yeah. And then moving to Michigan, I think it was meant to be.
Yeah.
And then he had 4 job offers before he finished his residency. Mm. That's how good he is.
What? But it's all in New York. So I didn't want to go.
Not New York?
Yeah. Oh, the job offer.
The
It's for Illinois. Yeah, it's for Illinois.
Ohio. The one in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he accepted Northern Michigan. We thought we could escape the cold. No.
He's like, We went colder. Let's go coldest.
Colder in a small town, like redneck town. Like redneck.
So I don't know if you live in.
Why did you know? We've only lived in Southern California.
We never moved.
So you're in a community, it's really diverse.
Yeah. So sunshine
in Petoskey, where we first time I accepted the job, 90% are white.
Mm,
so so we are the only Filipinos in the hostel.
Well,
so it's a big deal. But then we were comfortable. I mean, but sometimes you see some weird look that people look at you. But
or sometimes when you see another Asian, you're like.
Exactly, but there's not very many. Like my kids, when they started, they were the only
Asian.
Oh, that's one thing that my kids blame us right now.
They're not happy.
No, we did not. Tagalog is although it's our national language, it's not our first dialect. It's Cebuano
because we're not so different.
Okay, so how do you pronounce it?
Cebuano. Yeah, Cebuano.
Do they speak Cebuano?
No.
So they don't. So what happened?
But they took Tagalog for 4 years
in college.
In college, they took it.
So can they speak some now?
They can understand a few words.
They can understand, but they don't really speak because they're not exposed.
It's, it's very hard to be fluent when you
They don't have Filipino friends. They're all American friends. Her boyfriend is American. My son's girlfriend is American.
Like up north like that, and there weren't a lot of Filipino ingredients. What kind of food did you guys cook?
I was home. Well, when we go to, we have to improvise to be able to. And if I go home to the Philippines, I buy. And then we go downstate. There's some Filipino stores.
4 hours drive.
Asian store. 4 hours drive. And then we
one stop way?
One way.
One way.
So we, when we go there, we obviously have to buy a lot. You good 4 months.
And you like shopping.
Yes, I do.
And he still does. He still does. Yeah.
So you have to haul, just bring a whole bunch of stuff back.
When you first got here, could you bring, Filipino food to the hospital and eat?
Oh, I want to know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which hospital in Northern Michigan?
No, the first one was Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee?
Yeah. In Milwaukee.
Did you eat Filipino food in the cafeteria?
There's no Filipino food in the cafeteria.
What did you bring? Did you learn how to cook Filipino food?
I did not cook.
I don't know
how to learn how to cook. So, beside the hospital, there's a Hardee's.
Fried chicken.
Yeah. Oh. There's food in the cafeteria, but we have to count our money because it's not enough to buy it. We thought it was so expensive because we always have to do the exchange thing from US to convert it. And then, of course, $13 per hour did not help at all. There was one evening I only ate Pringles for dinner.
Because it was too expensive?
Our very first time. Because we did not go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had because my sister sent me Pringles from California. And then my mom called her and said, you got to send, they call me Sasa. You got to send Sasa food. She's starving over there now. And so my sister packed a box and sent food for me.
Oh, wow. So it was hard for you just to even think of how much the price because... back home.
So, you're still converting.
We're still converting.
It took a while for me to move on from that.
Mm-hmm. When was the first time that you cooked Filipino food and someone non-Filipino ate it?
Okay, so it's just me and a few of us that don't cook, but there's some Filipinos also that have learned how to cook. There are 10 of us.
Yeah.
So, and two of them have families already in Wisconsin. So we got invited. And so the family cook, and that's how we can.
That's how you get to eat it.
And of course, in fact, our landlord is American, our very first landlord. We stayed with him for 2 weeks, and he eventually married one of the Filipinas.
Oh my God.
That's another drama. It's like drama. Lives are like K-drama. I can talk to you for hours.
K-drama.
He's 40 years old, divorced with 4 kids.
And then
she was...
single.
Not single. She was engaged.
She was engaged to be married.
She was engaged to be married.
And her fiance was in the Philippines?
In the Philippines.
Yes,
oh, heartbroken.
Oh, he came.
Oh, he came too?
Yes.
To fight for her.
Yeah. And that's what's going on. And then, and Adela said, I'm in love with Steve. This 40-year-old Steve.
14 years.
Did they make it?
Yeah. They have two kids. Yeah. So he's got a total of 6 kids, but they look very, very old.
Exactly.
They need it. They have 2 kids.
Oh, wow. That's kind of interesting.
I know.
Love has no age.
Poor Filipino
guy.
Fiance. So he just went back.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you in relationships? I should put you on the hot seat now. You've been on the hot seat for so long.
It's so fun. The conversation is it's actually really interesting. If you had to tell someone now who's in the Philippines to come that has aspirations to come to the US, mm-hmm. what will be your top 3 advice that you want to give them to prepare for successful transition to the US? What would be 3 advice you give them?
This is for nursing.
Yes,
yeah, or any profession.
It can be anything. But you can be nursing as well.
To achieve the American dream.
Yeah.
To achieve. First of all, you really have to want to come here. You have to be resilient. Mm-hmm. Because as I've said, when you come here, one thing that will hit you is loneliness. You're going to be lonely. You're going to be homesick. And number 2, work hard. You just have to work hard no matter what. You will, not every place of work is ideal.
Mm.
you will experience negative, a lot of negative, but you just have to be persistent that, you know, I'll make it no matter what. Of course, before coming here, number one, you got to study because there's going to be so many exams. They added more exams now to take to come here. It's not easy anymore to come here. Plus, of course, this immigration thing. That's hard. And number three, maybe you need to adapt well. Adaptability, you have to adapt well because you're no longer with a Filipino setting. You have patients that are from all walks of life, you know, American, whatever. So, and not just your patients, but you have your co-workers that you have to deal with. You have your super, you know, the whole thing. And you're just a little bit of a bigger picture. So you need to learn how to adapt well. And yeah, adaptability is very important, especially coming from a third world country, coming to this country.
Those are really three really good points. Last,
do you have anything?
No, I agree with her. It's mainly that any obstacle that you encounter, it's you have to, that doesn't make you feel like, oh, I failed. You actually should be motivated more to find ways to solve the problem and reach the goal. Because in your journey here, you're going to encounter a lot of obstacles and some you might consider failures. But we always think of, oh, this happened. And I think it's we actually think the same, that, oh, this is an opportunity for a better situation, most likely, because that this is not working. So that means there's a better situation that it's probably going to happen for us.
Yeah.
So we don't really feel like, it's really down. So we might be,
you know what,
disappointed, but
you know, the bottom line, you know what really helped us? Our faith. Faith, prayer. Oh my God. You need to have love and have prayer.
Yeah.
You have to have that one, right? We prayed. Noelle and we prayed.
We pray for our kids.
We still pray for our kids. Yeah. We tell them, we pray for you.
Yeah. So they would just say thank you, but they're not really as serious about it.
And avoid situations that's going to put you in an unideal situation. Yeah. One perfect example, because of loneliness, you might get yourself involved with someone that's not
It's actually, there's a lot of stories like that, even Filipinos. Yeah. They're married in the Philippines. By the time they come here, they find somebody.
They find somebody else.
Unfortunately, it's the biggest thing. It's loneliness.
You have to learn how to be true to yourself. I think that's the bottom line. Yeah. Because when I came, you think there was no, because so lonely. There was someone that was pursuing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was a doctor too.
He was already a doctor.
He's a doctor. No.
He was like me. Applying, actually taking the exam applying.
But working as a surgical assistant. But
he was making money.
Making money, driving a BMW.
So the first time, this is the reason why he's so funny. The first time he saw me, he got me from around.
Like, who are you? The one Vanessa chose.
Why? Yeah. One day he asked me, my friend Lisa, called Troy and said, Troy, can you take us to this bridal boutique? Because I wanted my measurements taken to send it to him so he can have my gown, made over there. And then so he thought it was Lisa's. And then he says, who's wedding? And Lisa said, Vanessa, she's getting married. And she says, she is. And then he told me, Vanessa, you broke my heart. But I did not encourage him. He kept inviting me and I kept saying, no, I have a boyfriend. And he says, but you're not married. And I said, yeah, it doesn't mean you got to be true to yourself. No matter how lonely you are, you want to date someone or you want to be with someone. No.
That's not That's amazing. Okay, last question. So this one doesn't have to be your first trip here, but any trips you've made to the Philippines. In your suitcase, what did you bring that would surprise the audience? That be like, it could be emotional, it could be practical, it could be something like that. Like, what was something that you brought in your suitcase? It could be spices, could be anything. When you came to the U.S., would be like
the first time that I got.
Yeah, the first time. Yeah, like what was something that's interesting that you brought?
Should I bring anything interesting?
It doesn't even have to be the first time. It could be the next time or any time. So, for instance, Nan, when she went to Australia for her exchange, she took a pan, like a pan.
Frying pan.
Like a wok.
Yeah, because I was like, I'm going to
going to spend money like buying a pan when I'm there. I'm just going to like feed myself. And And then it turned out like they have the house, they have everything. And I'm like, oh my God, why did I bring this pan?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh my God.
So you have anything like that?
No, I only bring like, you know, goodies
over there. I heard you say dried
mangoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bring dried mangoes because they like that. They like that here, right, hun?
Yeah. So those were that was for someone else.
That's for someone. Are you talking for me?
Yeah, for you.
Oh, what did I bring for me? I love food. Uh-huh. So mostly it's just food. It's,
yeah.
Maybe I was so deprived when I first came here. Yeah. Food. I don't know.
Of home.
What about you?
No, I remember now, actually. the one thing that I actually brought for sure that was really important on the second time that came back to the U.S. After going to the Philippines was a cookbook. Filipino cookbook. Because I knew that because for the 1 year like we were just not eating properly and like we did like
15 pounds.
Yeah, we were just eating like really junk foods and so it's like well, I had to cook Filipino food but I didn't know how. So and then I thought so my mom gave me a cookbook and said well that's good and so started reading it. I felt like it was difficult and I said to myself, well, I passed medicine. There is no way that this is going to be more difficult than medicine. So I said, okay.
Every whole project, if he thinks that it is not easy, he will always think, I passed medicine, I can do this.
That's right.
Everything's
that's, like, that's how I think. But I know it's like even now, the trying to learn. And this is actually, to me, this is difficult also. But I felt like I'm motivated because I knew that if I just spend the time, I would make it work. I would learn this thing.
Yes.
And so that's how I always have that in mind.
That's like he learned. Yeah. He learned.
Just like real estate.
Yeah.
It would be easy for
like
you.
All this red, no one put that up. You'll see something upstairs. The wall project that he has here, he has painted.
I used to be doing wallpaper by myself, but
that is so hard.
Yeah, but it was so hard. But in the previous house in Michigan, we did a whole lot of. So I was even thinking maybe I should do a sideline. So
and he's such a perfectionist. Hated it. I hate assisting him. He was such a perfectionist.
We need wallpaper.
Don't do paint. Yeah. Don't do wallpaper.
No, actually, it's better. It's painting. It's better.
Just paint.
Yeah.
Oh, but you can do something.
For business purposes, everything is different for your house. Yeah. But.
Okay, last real question. So, how different is the reality of today versus the dream that you guys talked about when you were going to come here before you left for the Philippines? Like that dream of whatever, what was the dream that you wanted to achieve that at that time? And how different is it from today, from your current reality?
My dream coming here was very simple. Just work, earn my money, and just live a little bit more comfortably than I did in the Philippines. Very, very simple. Have, Noel, raise a family. Just, I, at that time, thinking about maybe buying a house, a small house, nice, for the family, that's like more than enough for me, and will continue to work as a nurse.
Mm.
But now it's different now because we have evolved, through the years. We have achieved far greater than what we have ever dreamed in the beginning. And now we're talking about legacy because we've already achieved what we, like me, I'm retired. And so now it's about legacy now for the family, for the kids, and giving back. That's the most important thing. It's more of giving back now to people, to our country, to others. That's
so amazing. I can talk you guys for hours.
Yeah.
I can talk you guys for hours on this, but like, okay, this is really amazing. And the food is actually really, really good. And I know. So let's
more food with the kids.
Yes. Thank you so much for this.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know what? If it's cold now, let's warm it up. I like it.